The impact of phones and technology, the view from educators.
When they're given a screen to kind of babysit them, then they don't have the experiences of, you know, dealing with their emotions.
What educators are seeing with phones and technology today in the Upper Cumberland. Our coverage of the Restoring Childhood Initiative continues as we get the view from the classroom. Two Putnam County school educators who work one-on-one with teachers every day. They hear the stories. They hear the trends. Bubba Whittingham is the 9-12 curriculum supervisor for the Putnam County Schools. Diana Wood supervises the pre-K through fourth grade curriculum.
We are seeing our children come into school less able to regulate their own emotions. We're seeing more tantrums, more demonstrative behaviors in our younger students, pre-K and kindergarten, for sure. It seems that they are less able to deal with conflict, deal with peers, deal with being told no. It just seems to be what we're seeing more prevalently lately.
I'm sure someone listening would say, okay, what does that have to do with technology? Why would we see more tantrums? Why would we see more of that not able to control oneself?
Of course, we haven't done any kind of official studies, sure, but we're just looking at kind of correlation and where our society, where our culture, where our world has gone lately. For lack of better words, it seems like maybe they've been pacified with screens in the young years. That birth to five is so important for cognitive development. And when they're given a screen to kind of babysit them, then they don't have the experiences of, you know, dealing with their emotions. And so if they are upset, maybe somebody hands them a screen. And so that has worked for them until they get to school. And we, you know, are dealing with all kinds of things, following directions, having to follow group directions, and maybe do some non-preferred activities. And so it's creating, you know, a little havoc sometimes in our classrooms.
And Bubba, as you get to your grade levels, the grade levels that you work with, the problems, they kind of multiply from there.
Correct. And so, and naturally, even before COVID and kind of technology and screen use, we know that there's a decline in engagement as you go from elementary school to middle school to high school. Kids love, you know, they're all about. And when they get to middle school, a little less, and then in high school, and not all kids, but, you know, that's a trend that we see. So it's magnified now when you have another distraction for them and one that's so prevalent and has so many levels to it, it's magnified. And so that engagement piece, you know, is even harder at the middle school level and the high school level when we're asking them to stop thinking about technology or whatever else they're thinking about and engage in a text or engage in a math, you know, lesson. So it's more prevalent. And then I think once they get to the middle school, that device becomes more of a, you know, I don't want to say a best friend, but I mean, it's almost something they've grown up with, and now it becomes an addiction, I guess. And so they become addicted to it, and it's even tougher to, you know, backtrack that. So, it's just again, as you go on, I mean, that we want to keep middle schoolers engaged. We want to keep high schoolers engaged, and teachers do a great job of doing that. It's just they're fighting a battle that's, you know, it's multi-layered and very tough.
The prevalency is an interesting part of this, because as you hear this discussion, your mind maybe for someone of my era says, it's kind of like the thoughts about television, you know, in the 1970s, that kids are just addicted to television. The difference was, you couldn't carry that television with you.
Yeah.
You know, you might camp in front of it for 4 hours every afternoon.
Yeah.
But then it was gone.
Yeah. And that's the problem, is that they have it with them. And even when I was growing up, you could turn it off. Like somebody could turn it off and then, you know, it was done. And now, since they have it with them, I mean, they control that. They control whether they turn it on or turn it off when it's out of the reach of a parent or a guardian. So it's like I said, it becomes that addiction piece, and it's very difficult to just turn it off or walk away from
it. We see it in restaurants. We see it in stores. I've seen kids holding a device walking with their parent across the street. I mean, it's as they walk. So it's forever present, it appears.
But if you step foot on the Tennessee Tech campus, I mean, you can't go a block without seeing they're walking and texting or swiping or doing whatever. I mean, addiction is a tough word, but I mean, are we kind of to that point as you look at it?
It seems to me, it seems that way. I mean, like I said, that's even in my own household. I know that, you know, that's a battle that I can, when you start to backtrack that or take that away, it's a fight. And so, that's where in those middle school years, like it just becomes, the more they have that, the closer and closer they get to that, and the harder and harder it is to break and, you know, separate.
And I would say too, that's a big piece of this conversation that, I haven't heard as much about is we're focusing so much on the childhood experience here in Cookeville with this Restoring Childhood, which is a fabulous initiative, and I'm so thankful that we are. But we are focused a lot on the children, and rightly so. But it is for all of us. I feel like, you know, I don't know if it's an addiction, but it's definitely a big piece of our lives. And so that side of it, I think, I know in my own home, just like Dr. Winningham said, we all have devices as well. And I know many times I've been looking at my phone and my husband may say something and I have to have him repeat it. So I do think often about if I was parenting young children right now, how maybe I might be a distracted parent. And that plays into that, all works together. So I think this initiative that we're doing in Putnam County is so valuable because it's for all of us. We're focused on the children, but if we can all learn a lesson from this.
Dr. Diana Wood, Dr. Bubba Winningham, as we're talking about devices and our technical world and the impact on young people. Just before we left a moment ago, Dr. Diana Wood, you were talking about it's a lesson for all of us. You work specifically with pre-K through fourth grade students. How much are we as parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, are we modeling for those younger kids when we sit at home and can't stay off the email and can't stay off the laptop and all of that?
Sure. No, I do. I wonder about that and I worry about that as well. I think that, you know, especially in our families, our parents are our first guardians, are the child's first teacher. And so they tend to, you know, model what we do, not always what we say or tell them to do. And so absolutely, I think it's a huge factor. So I think if we can model balance, because of course, you know, we're not, as Ryan said last week, you know, we're not trying to ban technology. Technology is very valuable. But if we can model that balance in our lives, I think that is an important lesson for kids.
Do you see more disruption in the classroom that you point to and say, okay, this is technology driven?
I think that some of the disruptions I talked about earlier with tantrums and, you know, not being able to regulate emotions, I think we kind of draw back to technology. Also, the attention span is huge because, you know, it's really hard to compete with all the bells and whistles of the video games and the videos that they're watching where the screen is changing, you know, milliseconds. And then you have your teacher up in front, you know, trying to lead a lesson. That's a big part, you know, is our decreased in attention spans and just staying engaged, like Dr. Winningham talked about. That's a big piece of learning, is being engaged in the lesson that's being brought to you.
Yes, and I think once we get to the older grades, we have to start talking about not only the attention span, but behaviors and this disruptions to the learning environment with behaviors. And a lot of those stem, I mean, even when I was at All Good, you know, a lot of the behaviors that came out of that, it was perpetrated and excelled or accelerated by social media. And so those behaviors disrupt a day, any given day, a lesson for a teacher. And so those things come up and it's, you know, that distracts, that disrupts the learning environment for kids. So we see that as well. And maybe if those devices aren't with them and, you know, they have to handle conflict like the old days, you know, talk it out, or, and we just don't That's rare that you have that, because it's, you know, social media, it's right there. It's,
and in fact, your principals during some of the work sessions leading up to the discussion of the phone ban talked about the fact that you could correlate long breaks and lunch periods because those were the matches for these things to kind of explode.
That's what everybody started looking and figuring out, what other people were saying and what was being spread and all that. And then it gets everybody heightened, and then, you know, you have a disruption. So it's definitely we see it in the older grades as well, too. And what administrators are trying to combat with behavior, it's definitely there.
The attention span part of this. Someone mentioned the fact that, you know, that one of the lessons that children have to learn very early on is how to be bored. You know, how do you sit still? How do you just manage yourself?
And we, you know, I think our teachers do a wonderful job of adding movement, especially in elementary school, to our lessons. So we're not always asking them just to sit and listen. Sit and get is what we call it. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do that. But again, it's hard to compete with the what ignites in the brain when you're looking at all those colors and all the movement and things like that. So it's an issue for sure.
Does it affect how your teachers develop their lesson plans, the attention span?
It definitely does, just because in aside from the technology and the device conversation, kids need, they have shorter attention spans anyway, younger children do. So we take that into consideration anyway. But when we're prepping our lessons, we definitely look for opportunities to add engagement, add movement, add turn and talk, so they can kind of talk about what they're learning at different intervals. But definitely it is part of the planning process when you're planning a lesson. Even aside from the device conversation.
Well, my sense is that the adult of today who walked back into a high school or even a middle school to some extent that remembers the 50-minute lecture would not recognize what a classroom looks like.
Right. It would be very tough to, and because most of our curriculum, you know, they have an online component. So our teachers are trying to, I mean, they want to utilize that, and a lot of that they kind of have to, but look for opportunities for that engagement, like Dr. Wood said, and that getting up and moving around and engaging with each other and having conversations with each other and then sharing those out. What, you know, that's such an important piece of two people talking, and then let me repeat to you what this person said, and getting those, that type of engagement where, you know, those kids have that opportunity, and it's not just I'm sitting at a laptop for an hour and a half and I'm just inputting stuff into a computer. Our teachers are doing a really good job of planning those lessons and getting that, combating that lessened engagement that they see. So
giving you a sense of how education is being impacted by this technological world that we live in with Dr. Diana Wood and Dr. Bubba Winningham. Resiliency. Part of what school teaches you is you make a mistake and you learn from it. It's been talked about through the Restoring Childhood Initiative that the modern child maybe does not have the same kind of resilience. Dr. Diana Wood, are you seeing that in the classroom?
We are seeing that. We're seeing that in the way that children are able to deal with failure or not doing their, you know, not doing perfectly. It goes back to what we talked about before about being able to regulate their emotions. They just don't know what to do. They haven't had a lot of that in their lives. They, you know, and it could be because they were just handed a device and don't worry about it. But really praising effort and hard work and progress is important. But we are definitely seeing the inability to deal with that.
Does it grow, Bubba, as quote unquote the stakes get higher?
It does. And so it's same thing. We're not, you know, used to if you failed or if you didn't succeed the first time. I mean, there was a care and a want to, okay, how do I get better? What do I need to do to get better? And you saw that quite a bit. And so now it's almost, you know, I failed the eighth grade. I'm good. Like, I don't, what, there's nothing, you know, there's no intrinsic motivation to say that's a problem. So what are you going to do about it? And so that we've seen an absence of that, which is very concerning, because we want those kids to care. We want them. We want you to fail. We want you to see and not fail overall, but we want you to fail. And then how can you correct that? That's the lesson that comes from that is failure, then trying again, then succeeding, and that journey in between. So that's what we want kids to figure out. And we don't want you just to fail and then not care. And, you know, well, whatever happens, happens. That's not the attitude. And so we're trying to combat that as well. And you know, if you fail, okay, let's try this again a different way and see if it works. But that's a two-way street. So the teacher can help all they can on that. But if the kid, you know, if the student doesn't come with that same motivation and care, it's very difficult to get them to see that side of it.
And we really need our parent support with that as well, because that goes a long way in helping develop that resiliency. So, you know, parents being okay with their kids mm-hmm. having to work hard and have a little bit of failure as well, because often we will hear, you know, parents don't want their kids to go through that either. So, you know, all of us having a concerted effort to work on this together is going to be very important.
Bubba, do you see the argument that is made in the book that by kids not getting a chance to go out and play and create, that maybe some of that resilience, maybe some of that attitude, maybe some of that just creativity in solutions, not mm-hmm. necessarily talking about artistic creativity, right. but just, I got to figure out
right.
how to do this. Do you think that some of that's being impacted?
I do. And just from my personal experience growing up and then seeing, I mean, I've got young kids right now. So seeing their experience as well, working through problems, you know, I can definitely say that there's an impact there between what they spend their time doing versus what they're trying to figure out to do. So it's, you know, I'm of the firm belief that, you know, let them go outside, let them figure it out, let them play. You know, argue a little bit, let me hear you screaming out in the yard with each other and figuring things out. Like mm-hmm. that's how we grew, you know, and I'm not saying how we grew up's the end all be all, but I do think there's a benefit in figuring some of those things out on their own and working through that conflict and working through those problems where you're not just, all right, well, it's a problem, I'm going to check out, let me have my device and check out and not even think about mm-hmm. or come back to that situation.
We're talking about technology and the impact on our kids. Dr. Diana Wood, Dr. Bubba Winningham from the Putnam County Schools, our guest.
Really, just have conversations with your kids. You know, that we've talked about that on the literacy side of things and how that's a precursor to learning to read. But just having those conversations, building vocabulary. But really, on this in this conversation, having those conversations, I think, also are important for mental health. Talk through, how did that make you, if somebody, you know, pushed you or somebody said something that was unkind, how did that make you feel? And what are we going to do next? And what could we do differently? And just having those kinds of conversations, number one, means that you're engaged with your child and you're not on your device and they're not on theirs. And then it's also just helping them process their feelings, helping them develop that resiliency. I think those are great things, just having those conversations at home, reading with your kids at home. Just put down the devices and do anything. Go out for a walk. Go out and play. Anytime you can, just be present with your kids, because they really, you know, more than anything, want your time and attention. And they may say they want their iPad or whatever, but really you could distract them easily with you.
It's an interesting issue. Dr. Bubba Winningham, the 9-12 curriculum supervisor for the Putnam County Schools, Dr. Diana Wood, curriculum supervisor pre-K through 4. Thank you both for educating us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.